Hi, I'm Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Emma.
Let's see if Dr. Amy has justice. Okay, I think we're good. Great. Thanks for the brief introduction. Again, I'm Emma. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 20th of 2019. I have a sponsor and my home group is Midtown. It's really good to be here. Billy, thank you for asking me. I was here about 4 months ago with some of my other home group members and you guys are great. Everyone is so friendly here. I'm like, wow, this is great. I'll definitely be coming back, hopefully. It's an hour and a half away, but it was a good drive. It's really good to be here. I love doing service for Alcoholics Anonymous because it truly, truly has saved my life. My home group is Midtown. If you're ever in the area, definitely come by. Probably some of you have come. It's about like a 400-person home group, and it's great. And I guess I'll just get going. I've never done an hour talk before. So if I am a little short, just bear with me a little bit. Usually I tend to talk a lot. So hopefully we'll fill up the whole hour. If not, we'll have open sharing, maybe. And I'm on Zoom, right?
You're on Zoom. Should you see yourself?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah, great. I'll tell you a little bit about what happened, what it's like, and why I'm in the rooms today, and how my life has changed. I love alcohol. I grew up loving alcohol. I loved getting fucked up. Can I curse in here? No? Okay, sorry. I love getting messed up any way possible from a very young age. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I started learning about what alcoholism was and the character traits of what alcoholism was. When I was younger, before I started drinking, I never felt fully super uncomfortable with how I was feeling. You know, I never felt super anxious. A lot of people talk about in the rooms when they took their first sip of alcohol and they had this huge relief and they could finally breathe again. That was not my experience. I never felt super, super uncomfortable. As I've gotten more time sober, I realize why I drank though. I am very, very uncomfortable sober. And not until I got sober did I start to feel that really uncomfortable, anxious feeling of not being able to have a drink. So when I was younger, I mean, I really just drank and I started drinking because everyone else was drinking around me. I like to be cool. I always wanted to fit in. I feel like even alcoholic or not, you kind of always want to fit in, you know? So sometimes, you know, like with these like alcoholic traits, I'm like, I think normal people are like that too, you know, just like the feeling of needing to connect, the feeling of needing to be liked. So I always felt like that. So I don't know, alcoholism or not, I'm very much a people pleaser. I always want to connect to everyone. Very much the chameleon, like it says in the book. Like I will try to fit in as much as possible. But so I started drinking. I was very much a weekend warrior. So I came into the rooms and when someone talked about weekend warrior, I'm like, that is me. You know, I drank. I loved it from the beginning. I don't know what age it was. I think I started drinking in eighth grade and I don't know ages. I only know grades. So I don't know how old I was, but I started drinking in eighth grade. It was the first time I took a sip of alcohol. And again, the only reason why I drank was because everyone else drank around me. So again, I really wanted to fit in and I loved it. You know, I loved the thrill of it. I loved that camaraderie around surrounding drinking. I loved kind of being bad, but I also loved being good. So like, as I started to drink, it was very confusing because I grew up with all these morals and responsibilities. And so I really wanted to be this good girl that I grew up, like, you know, my parents taught me really good morals and responsibilities. So I always wanted to be this good girl, but then I had this really bad side to me. And that started right as I started drinking. So again, I wasn't like super off to the races right from the very beginning because simply because I couldn't get it. So I started drinking in eighth grade because everyone else around me drink. And I said weekend warrior already. I was very much a weekend warrior. So in high school, I grew up in Rockville, Maryland. I don't know if you guys know it probably. And I went to a really good high school. I played a ton of sports. I was pretty liked, I think, well liked. I was very social. I had a lot of friends and I just really liked to party. And from the very beginning, I knew that my drinking was abnormal to all of my friends. Like that exciting feeling of knowing that you're going to go out and starting to pregame before the party. Like I have not felt that excitement in sobriety yet. I have never felt so excited knowing that I'm going to drink and my friends really liked it, but they didn't get that excitement feeling that I got, you know, I just really, really loved it. And so what my high school kind of looked like was that I played a lot of sports. So I had to go to class, you know, I played sports after school. And again, I was pretty social. So I drank every time I could. And that was really just on the weekends again. So I drank on the weekends and I quickly went from just like kind of drinking a little bit normal, like my peers, to blacking out pretty quickly. And I was a blackout drinker. I don't know if you guys were, and it definitely doesn't make you an alcoholic. You don't have to black out, but that was just my drinking, you know, alcoholism. I was talking to my roommate in the car and we were like, we don't understand normal drinkers. Like for us, when we take a sip of alcohol, we have to have more. There's no in between. I take a sip and I never know where it's going to go. So I drink alcohol and I have that allergy. Like I really, really relate to the allergy that it talks about in the book. Like I need more. I don't know when I'm going to stop and I can't stop on my own. And I quickly related to that. And so, you know, I started blacking out but I didn't really have consequences in high school. So I had a few, underages. So an underage is when the cops come to a party and they breathalyzed me and, you know, I get an underage, but it's nothing like that bad. I never thought it was bad. I've gotten a few of them throughout my high school experience, just because I went to parties with everyone else and the cops had nothing else to do in our area besides to like bus kids that were drinking. And so I thought it was just bad luck. And that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. So a part of getting a citation or getting an underage is you have to go to AA. So that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought that it was fascinating. The people that were leading the meeting, I did not relate to whatsoever, but I was the one after they spoke that asked 1,000 questions. Because I was just like so fascinated with these hardcore like drug and drinking, and their stories were so cool. And they definitely like in those type of things, people aren't trying to get sober. So they just like practice sharing their stories. I've never spoken at anything like that now, but I could tell that it was like very exaggerated and things like that. But that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I came into the rooms, those two people that spoke at that citation class are members of my home group. So it was really cool. I'm like, you spoke at my citation class. And they were like, oh my God, I don't even remember, you know? But it was really cool that they're still there and they're still sober, and both of them helped me a ton. So that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never thought that I had a problem. But again, like my drinking just became a little bit more abnormal. So what my drinking kind of looked like in high school is that I would pregame before the party. I would get really super excited, be with like a few group of girls, and I would take shots and just like tally them on my arms. So like each shot I would tally. So in the morning I knew how much I drank, and it was becoming like 10, 11, 12 shots. And my other friends had like 4 on their arms. And I'm like, why aren't you guys drinking as much as me, you know? And then it started to just be like kind of funny. And I really, really enjoyed my drinking. Like, I know that some people come into the rooms and I don't relate, like their drinking just was never enjoyable. I loved to drink. It was really enjoyable for a really long time. And then it just like stopped becoming fun anymore. And I don't know exactly what the switch was, but I do remember it happening gradually. So in high school, my drinking was fun. And then I started to black out. And what the blackouts would look like is like, you know, I would drink, I would probably like kiss a boy in front of my boyfriend at the time, and I would throw up. And like, that's what my drinking escalated. And that's when it really started to take off. And that was the first time I ever made amends, is I drank in my friend's basement and her parents were home and I threw up everywhere and I had to apologize the next day. And I was mortified. And I promised myself that I was never going to do that again. And that was the first time I made like a type of promise like that to myself that I couldn't achieve, you know, because the next weekend, the same thing happened. I said that I was going to be the DD for my friends that night. Like the next night after that, I said I was going to be the DD for the week. And like, I was only going to stick to weed because I started to get really into other things. And I know that we're in Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, I love alcohol, but drugs are a part of my story. Like I think a lot of people too. So I would just do like other things to get myself out of trouble. And like, I never was able to stop completely. And so when I was a senior in high school, my sister was getting sober, and we all lived under the same roof. So it was myself, my parents, my dying grandmother, my sister who's an alcoholic, and the household was just not good. It was like, I never wanted to be there. I started to become really resentful at my whole family, and I never wanted to be home. My parents would joke about it and say that I had like an apartment in my home because I was never there. And when I was there, I was locked in my room because I just became so angry and like so resentful at them for no reason. They would ask me like how I am. And I'd be like, F you. You know, like, why are you asking me how I am? I'm fine. You know, just like a simple question like that. Like I started to build so much anger inside of me starting in high school. And so my sister was getting sober in high school. And I promised myself I was never going to be like that. I could not relate to her. She was coming home. She wasn't showering. She didn't have a cell phone anymore. You know, she had this really bad relationship with a guy. He almost killed her. It was this whole drama surrounding her drinking. And I wanted no part of it. And again, I did not relate to her type of drinking because I hadn't hit my bottom yet. So in my eyes, it was still fun. And she was just becoming a completely, entirely new human being. And so I promised myself I was never going to be like her. And now look, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I followed her path, pretty identical. And so, you know, I remember thinking, I'm like, that really sucks for her that she can never drink again. Like, this is the thing that I love. It's now becoming an identity for myself of this like party girl identity. And for her, she wasn't allowed to do that anymore. And I hadn't talked, I stopped really like talking to my sister, and I stopped really talking to my family that much. I mean, it's not this whole dramatic story of like, I moved out, I didn't talk to them anymore. You know, I still did. They paid for my college, which I'm really grateful for. But I grew up having a good relationship with my family, and then quickly something shifted in me, and I stopped having a relationship with them, and I stopped caring about them. And why I'm talking about that so much of like what happened and with my family is because now I'm so close with my family. Like, they are my lifeline. And that's something that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. And that's something that I never thought that I wanted, was to have a relationship with my family again. And so I know I'm rambling a little bit, but so my sister was getting sober. I wanted nothing to do with her. And I started developing these like alcoholic behaviors. I started to be extremely secretive. I started to be extremely avoidant with everything. So what that looks like is like in school, I would just avoid turning in papers, like something that simple, but I couldn't get myself to do anything and show up for my responsibilities, drinking or not. Like, I was just super avoidant of what I had to show up for at the time. So that looked like school, and I just like wouldn't do my schoolwork anymore. And so just like those little things shifted of me wanting to be a good student to me not caring at all about school. And so as I was applying to colleges, so I was also very, I wanted to look good from the outside. So all of my friends were applying to colleges when I clearly like couldn't handle going to the next step, whatever that looked like. And what that looked like in my life after high school was going to college. And so what I did is I applied to all schools that were really big party schools, because I didn't know that you go to college to get an education. That was like a completely foreign concept to me. I was so excited to go to college because I really like to drink at this point, and I wanted no other responsibility. I wasn't going to play a sport, which really saved me in high school. And so I could really drink how I wanted to and become this like party girl persona that like I thought that was meant to be for me. So I applied to all these colleges. One of the colleges that I got into, I went to visit my older friend that went there. And I quickly got an underage. It was in Colorado, and I was like drinking at her apartment, and the cops came, and, you know, they called my parents, and I had to fly home. And obviously my parents wouldn't let me go to that school. And so I visited the next school that I got into, and I loved it. It was a massive school. There was football. There were parties everywhere. And I went to a fraternity party there while I was visiting, while I was still in high school. And I remember I went to this party and like I swallowed a live fish and chased it with a beer. And I was like, that's what school I'm going to. And I literally, and my roommate's heard my story 5,000 times, so she knows this, but that's literally why I chose that school. And not because of the live fish experience, but just because of how they drank and how they partied. That was so attractive to me. I didn't care about school. I didn't even know what degree that like I was going for. And so that's what it looked like, my college career. I went to this school and I was lucky enough that my parents were able to pay for my college degree. And I went to college and that enjoying my drinking quickly stopped. And again, like I was saying, in high school, I really enjoyed my drinking. And I went to college and I found out that there, you didn't have to go to class. I really got lost in college. Like I really just lost myself. So I went to this big school and there were really big class sizes and I'm not great at school. And so I quickly fell through the cracks. But again, I wanted to put up this image of myself that I was still okay status-wise. So I still wanted to keep up with my peers of going to school, having this great degree, keeping a lot of friends, having a boyfriend, all those things, like those outside things that were so important to me. And I can still get really wrapped up in that. Like, how does my life look like today? Do I have a boyfriend? Am I going on the track to get married at a certain time? Like just those really big kind of like status image, materialistic things I really can still get caught up in, but I'm so thankful that I have a sponsor and she brings me in the right direction and kind of like knocks my ego down. And those things, you know, really don't matter to me today. Like my serenity is the most important thing because I'm crazy. My head is insane. It is so loud. And so like, I really need to be grounded and centered in AA so that those thoughts can be quiet and that those status and that those materialistic things on the outside, I can stop thinking about those things, you know, and see what you said in the beginning, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Like it's that simple, you know, and I forget so quickly because I'm so wrapped up in self. And so I really, really needed to keep up with the status of what my age was and what everyone in my area, what that looked like for them. So I tried so hard to make it through college. And this was when I was really being secretive about what was going on. And it's hard for me to remember things in my drinking. Like, I don't know if you guys relate. Like I feel like I have no memory. And it actually kind of scares me all the time. Like I always talk about it with Aaron. It's like I have amnesia for like a select period of time during my drinking. And all of a sudden I like woke up in sobriety and I like started living again. So those years of drinking in college are a big blur and I'm not going to bore you with every single story, but it's like, I joined a sorority. I went out 7 nights a week. I hooked up with a lot of guys who I didn't want to. I stopped going to class and I was still able to keep friends, which were really, really important to me. Like I was still able to keep up with friends. I was still able to lie that I was going to classes. I was able to like make up what my GPA was. You know, I was able to make up classes that I was going to, and I didn't fail all of my classes, but I quickly started to. And I remember there were like a few instances in my college that were really, really scary. And as I got to the 8th step and the 9th step, I was able to see that my just like drinking behavior that I thought I was just like sorority girl that drank too much. Like I was actually harming a lot of people. And I was able to like write that down with pen and paper to see actually how I was harming these people in my drinking. And some of those stories, what that looked like was like, I was at college and one of the nights that I went out, I blacked out. I took a lot of things. I drank a lot. I don't remember anything. And I woke up to my mom just like sitting on my bed at 5 a.m. And I guess the night before I threw my computer against this like massive mirror and there was just like glass everywhere. And I was saying that I was going to kill myself. And my boyfriend at the time called my mom and was like, Emma's not okay. You need to come up in the middle of the night. You know, like that that story is just like so dark, you know? And when I wake up and I'm sober, I'm like, you guys are so dramatic. Like, of course I'm not going to kill myself, you know? Like, I just had a bad night. Everything was just, I had a bad night. And not until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous is like, that wasn't normal. And I thought that was normal because I surrounded myself with a lot of people that drank like me. And what they weren't doing is they weren't doing the things in the middle of the night that I was doing. You know, I wasn't being honest about exactly what I was doing to everyone else. But I had a lot of stories like that, you know, like my mom coming up in the middle of the night, being so worried about me and me just like not caring at all who I was harming. My boyfriend at the time, you know, I was cheating on him and things like that in sobriety that I would just never, never do. And so, you know, in college, I was really, really lost. And I think college is a really hard time for a lot of people, alcoholics or not, but alcoholism makes it a lot harder. And so I'm not going to bore you with all these like little stories like that, but a lot of those stories happened and they were starting to happen more frequently. And that like shame and that guilt and that embarrassment really started to come in. And I remember my friends, when they blacked out, they had this like camaraderie around it. They were like, oh, you did this the night before. That's so funny. And when I blacked out, I like wanted to die. Like, I didn't think it was funny. I didn't want to know what I did, but normal drinkers like thought their stuff was funny. I don't know. That was just something that was really significant between alcoholics and non-alcoholics, is just that like shame. And even when I didn't do anything the night before, I still felt like I wanted to die. You know, even if nothing bad happened, I was still really miserable when I woke up. But anyway, so I was supposed to graduate and like this like lying behavior, these lying patterns started more and more. And my whole family came up for graduation, my grandparents, my parents, my sister, her husband, and they found out that I wasn't graduating, like at graduation, because I could not tell them what was going on in my life. Like, I could not tell them that I wasn't graduating. You know, it's just that behavior, that like twisted thinking of just like so self-centered, you know. They came, they were obviously so mad at me. And the first thing I thought was like, how can I save this for myself? Mm-hmm. You know? And so we made up this whole plan, like alcoholics, we make up an entire plan to like get our life on track. You know, I was always that person of tomorrow, everything's going to work out. If I can get tomorrow to tomorrow, my whole life is going to change. And then it would get to tomorrow and nothing happened. You know, it became 6 o'clock and I'm like, whatever, screw it. Tomorrow's the day. You know, so it was always a tomorrow for me. I always had a plan for tomorrow to like save my life and like it a really small period of time without making any actual changes. So I had this whole plan. I was going to get all these credits, you know, and graduate again. And I kid you not, that exact same thing happened. So my whole family came out for another graduation and I could not walk at graduation. So at this point, my parents were just like, come home. Like, I don't know what's going on with you, but I had 1,001 excuses of why this was happening. And none of it had to do with me. And none of it had to do with my drinking. It was my teachers. It was my friends. It was my eating disorder. It was my anxiety. You know, it was depression. But it wasn't my fault. So, like, nothing was my fault. Yeah, so I came home and nothing changed. I was able to, so I still hadn't graduated. But I was able to do this 1 year of AmeriCorps. So I taught in Southeast DC in Anacostia, and I taught for a year, and I taught second graders, which I actually really, really loved, but nothing was changing on like the inside. So my outside circumstances looked a little bit different. I was able to come home. I was able to kind of have a job, but no one knew that I hadn't graduated. So I still was lying to everyone around me because I wanted to put up this status. Like I keep talking about, it's a very big pattern for me that I want to look really good from the outside. And so I came home and the exact same thing was happening. So now this like vicious cycle of my drinking was starting. So I would wake up, I would take something to make me be awake all day long. And then I would be so anxious when I was driving home that the only thing that could fix that anxiety was like knowing that I had a drink in like the backseat of my car. So even knowing that I could like see a beer or see a bottle of wine or like see some vodka got me that relief. I didn't even have to drink it. Seeing that and knowing that I could drink it gave me so much relief. So by the end of the day, I really, really needed some relief and I was really uncomfortable. So the feelings of discomfort and discontentedness, I really felt like that when I was sober. And again, I wasn't sober. I just like didn't have alcohol in my system. So, you know, I would drink to go to bed and my mom would find like bottles all over my room and I would hide these bottles in my drawers and wrap them in clothes so that if she opened it, it wouldn't like clink. So I found like really good hiding, you know, things to do around the house. And one time she opened my closet because she needed to get like a backpack because she was traveling for the weekend. And she put up the backpack or, you know, lifted the backpack and it was just like clinking. And so she opened it and there were like 20 bottles of wine, empty bottles just in my backpack. And then so she started to go through my whole room. So there was literally, when I got home from work, there were 50 bottles just like on my bed. And I'm like, why would you go through my room? You know, like just like things like that. And that was totally normal for me. I'm like, didn't everyone do that? I'm now 21. And she's like, you're 21. Why are you drinking by yourself upstairs? Like you can drink with us now. But I'm like, I literally can't because I cannot have one glass of wine. And if I do have one glass of wine, I'm chugging it. And then I'm going back upstairs to do what I need to do. So you know, and my drinking started to get kind of scary. I was in this group of friends and they kind of drank like I did. They drank like I did, but my world was really, really small. So I have these friends that I would go out with on the weekends and it was just the same stuff. You know, I would like start on a Friday and not know anything that happened during the weekend. And I started to get scared, you know, things that I thought I would never do, I started to do. And everyone talks about that in the rooms, you know, they're super vague about it, but it's like things that I thought I wouldn't take or like people I thought I wasn't going to sleep with or like things I would do to my family that I never thought I would do. Like those things started to add up. And when you get in that cycle of not being able to get out, your world is like, at least for me, it just started to become so meaningless. And I had no way out. You know, I had no hope. I'm like, I don't know how to stop doing this because I was miserable and I was like, just like super mean to the people around me, but excluding like a few of my friends that I was nice to and that I liked, you know? But yeah, so one of these weekends I was on a really big bender and I woke up and this was a Monday and I had like gone to work on that Monday, not really remembering anything. And I came into my car on that Monday and I was so sick and tired of whatever I was doing. And I had like a bottle of wine in my backpack that I quickly picked up after work. And I called my sister because she was the only person that I knew that was sober. And I called her and I just started sobbing. And I'm like, can I come over? And at this point, she knows something's going on with me. Like I have talked to her in blackouts. I've worried her, but she's had to separate her relationship with me for a while because she's an AA. And she knows that she can't fix me. You know, she can't make me better. So she was just saving a seat for me for many years. I was really mean to her. And so I called her and I went to her apartment that she was living with her husband, who's also an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought I was going to tell her like half of the truth, maybe, because I was so miserable. And I was like, I'm going to tell her a little bit of what's going on. And then I'm going to drink my wine that's in my backpack. And I'm going to drink it in her guest room. And instead, I told her everything that was happening, as honest as I could be with what was going on. And for whatever reason, I like didn't drink that bottle of wine in my backpack. And I guess that's like God intervening, you know, because you heard my story. We know all of our stories. If we have a bottle of wine, we're drinking it. And I didn't drink it. And I found this like little glimpse of hope, you know, that window that you have that's so, so small of like, maybe my life can get better right now. And you just have to go with it. Like that window is going to close really quickly. And for whatever reason, I went with it. And like, I opened the window fully and I just like dove headfirst into AA. And what she told me on that night was like, you never have to live like this anymore and you don't have to drink again. And I believed her. You know, never, no one has ever told me that in my life. I never knew that that was an option, really. Even though she was sober and I knew that it was working for her, something was working for her, I never thought that that was an option for me. And so for the first time, I believed it. And what that looks like for me is she told me that come to a meeting with me tomorrow night or I'll check you into rehab. And I decided to go to a meeting and I didn't have to go to rehab. I know that's like a lot of people's stories that they did. I was just able to get it on, you know, my first try. That's still my sobriety date today. I hope that that always remains my sobriety date. But I went to a meeting with her the next day. And I remember I was talking to my mom and she's like, yeah, you know, you don't have to get a spot. Cause I was terrified. I knew nothing of the program. I didn't know what my life was going to look like. I was so scared. And my mom was like, you know, you don't have to get a sponsor. So I was like, oh, that makes me feel a little bit better. I don't actually have to do the program fully. Quickly, I got a sponsor like the next week. But just knowing that like the only thing I needed to do was not drink was like good enough for me and to just go to meetings. And so my first meeting that I went to, I remember everyone was using this really strange terminology that I like did not understand at all. People were talking about inventory and like meditating and praying and that they're super uncomfortable because they're not meditating that day. And I'm like, what is going on? Like they are talking about that they're not meditating enough. Like they're sober. They're so lucky that they're sober. Like I just remember vividly having these thoughts of like, they don't even know how lucky they are that they're sober. And they're talking about like not meditating and praying enough. And so I was really, really confused my first meeting and nothing, I don't remember anything that was being said. The fog was with me for basically like the first year and a half of my sobriety. I still like didn't remember a lot of things and I was really confused all the time, but I got a sponsor and that really, really saved my life. My sister kind of was like, you should get her because she would be a good fit. So I did, you know, and she's a great fit. She had a very, very similar story to me and I really trusted her. And at that time I didn't trust anyone. I was super resentful at a lot of people in my life. I was really confused. I came into the rooms not wanting to change at all. Like I only wanted to get sober, but I wanted to keep my friends and I wanted to keep my life. Why? I have no idea. Because then I went through the steps and I was like, I do not want to be this person. You know, I want to change really badly. It was really hard. My defects are like blaring all the time. But as I continue to stay sober, my defects prop up and I'm able to talk about them with a sponsor and gradually they're just removed. No, they're not removed, but they get less and less, you know? And so the first step, my life was really unmanageable. You heard my story for probably far too long. I was rambling and it was maybe a drunk log, but you know, it was super unmanageable. All of our lives were unmanageable. And I was so powerless over my drinking. I did not know how to stop drinking. And so my first step was like very clear for me. Now, as I stay sober for a longer period of time, I question my first step sometimes. And that's why talking to newcomers is so important and crucial for me because I relate on such a deep level. If I don't work with newcomers, I really forget why I'm here. And I can twist it of like, my story is not that bad. And I can start hanging out with people who aren't alcoholics. And I'm like, I like this life. They're normal, you know? And so, you know, my first step was really strong when I came into the rooms. And the second step came to relieve that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Like I was on board, you know, I was on board with the second step and the third step, but I didn't know what it meant at all. But I'm like, all right, sign me up. Like I'm down to do whatever to like stop the life that I was doing before. And I didn't really understand them. So what it looks like today in my sobriety is I'm able to turn some stuff over in my life. Like when I don't have to do everything myself and control everything, it gives me relief. When I don't have to control all the situations that happen, I'm really, really powerless over my thinking. I'm really powerless over my thoughts. Like, I wish so badly that I could just take it away. Like, I'm the type of alcoholic that, like, I'm running constantly. Like, there was one point in my sobriety that I, like, completely stopped sleeping, and I had insomnia, and it's because, like, my brain doesn't shut off, and it's really scary. And so I really need to work the steps and be current with a sponsor for me to be able to, honestly, like, little things like sleep. But, you know, I'm able to believe in a power greater than myself to kind of, you know, restore me to sanity, because the insane thing would be to drink again. And I don't want to do that. My fourth step and my fifth step were really, really powerful, because that was the first time in my life where I was able to take responsibility for what I was doing. And, like, I had a ton of resentments when I came into the room. I was living with this girl at the time. I was living with a roommate, and I hated her, but I was also, like, really obsessed with her. So it was this very, like, codependency type relationship. And I had a lot of those in my drinking. I really relied on people so, so heavily to fix me. And I thought I was, like, the best friend ever, because I would do anything to, like, make them like me, essentially. So it was still really selfish, but these, like, codependent type relationships, I had a lot of resentments with people like that. And I was able to see where I was dishonest and afraid and fearful. And I was able to see my part in situations, which set me up to be able to take inventories with my sponsor. That really saved my life today. Because when I'm not current with my sponsor and I let my little, like, white lies slip away, and I have these, like, ankle biter, you know, inventory things, like, I'm not doing my job at work. You know, I'm being dishonest with my friends. I'm lashing out at my partner, and I'm doing really embarrassing things. Like, if I don't tell my sponsor that, I get really, really crazy. And, like, I don't know why, it just is like that. So my fourth step really set me up to be able to take inventory with my sponsor. And again, I was able to kind of, like, look at those resentments and see where I caused a lot of harm. And I'm always in my sixth and seventh step. Like, I am always semi uncomfortable in a lot of situations. So, but again, with my defects, like, I'm able to kind of more so pray to God and, like, humbly ask him to remove them. Cause sometimes, you know, I want to live in my defects. Like, I want to continue gossiping. Like, I want to continue being really mean to my boyfriend. Like, that's, like, the easier, softer way. And I'm not able to, like, fully pray away those defects yet. But when I am, it is able to bring me some relief. And, you know, like, I'm constantly working on my defects. A lot are cropping up. Like, one thing today is that my boyfriend is moving to Taiwan for a year. And I made that, like, so personal against me. I'm like, how dare you leave me? I'm going to kill myself. Like, the things I said in my drinking, I'm now saying sober, you know, and I had to, like, read those texts to my sponsor that were, like, really embarrassing of what I was telling him, you know? And so, like, my defects are very much so a part of me still, but at this point I'm able to identify them and I'm able to work through them, and hopefully they'll be able to be removed, because I'm really uncomfortable when I'm acting out on those defects. And I'm not able to sit in discomfort anymore, really. Like, my pain tolerance has gotten really low. When I was newly sober, I was able to sit in my pain and just, like, think about it constantly. And now I'm grateful that I'm able to not sit in that anymore, as painful as that is. It's like, I know the next right action, so I don't have to just, like, sit in my thinking all day long, because I'm able to do that. I'm able to think 24/7. And so six and seven made a list of all persons we had harmed, and the ninth step, my amends. A few of my amends were very, very powerful. Like, my amends with my family, I just basically, like, sobbed to all of my family members when I apologized to them, you know, cause they mean a lot to me, and I really caused a lot of harm. Like, my mom's a preschool teacher, and I would tell her, I would be like, your job doesn't matter. You know, like, you don't help dad, like, just, like, really, really mean things. Cause I was so resentful all the time. So just, like, these, like, this anger, you know? And so I was able to, like, I'm able to live differently now. So I was able to make amends with them fairly quick. And I remember when my sister made amends to me, and I had, like, a laundry list of things that she left out. of what she did to me, you know? And then I was able to make amends to her, and she just forgave me. And she's like, just stay sober and keep doing this because you're, you know, a different person. And today the biggest change that has happened in my life, again, what I said in the beginning, is like having my family back. And I rely on them so much. They live within like a 10-mile radius of me, my sister and my parents. And I'm able to show up for them for the first time. You know, my sister had a baby and she's now pregnant again. And I'm just able to be there for her. And I definitely wasn't showing up for anyone in my drinking. And another amends that was pretty powerful for me was with that roommate that I was so resentful at. There was a lot of stuff that happened, like her boyfriend died in a car crash, and he was living with us also. And then she started dating his best friend, who was also in the car crash that survived. Like, it was really, really messy. And I was really resentful at everyone involved. And I blamed a lot of that on why I was like drinking and my drug use. And our relationship was really, really awkward for a really long time. And I didn't know how to navigate those relationships that I had in my drinking. And then all of a sudden kind of like leaving them behind so that I could get sober. It was really hard for me to navigate the transitions in my relationships from drinking to sobriety, because a lot of them were surrounding, you know, my drinking. But I was able to really look at my part in this relationship. And so I made amends to her, and I'm able to talk to her, and it's not awkward. You know, when you like talk to people and it's just like so underlyingly awkward and uncomfortable and you don't know why, but like a lot of it is on you, that completely went away. And also with my dad, for a really long time, like his name, when he popped up in my phone of just like dad, I automatically had like a panic attack when I would see my dad calling me on my phone, because there was just so much stuff that I was lying about, like, especially with my school and things like that. I was just scared that I was always getting in trouble. And now when he calls me, I'm like excited, you know, to see dad on my phone, just something really simple. And that really happened when I made amends to those people. And I'm still not done with my amends, but it's definitely been crucial in my sobriety looking back at it. None of them were like super powerful during my amends that I made, but looking back, it's been really cool to see how those relationships have transformed. You know, the 10 step, 11 step, and 12 step, my 11 step is really ongoing. It's really hard for me to get a good practice and routine of prayer and meditation, but I know when I am doing prayer and meditation, I feel a lot better. So it's kind of like an ongoing practice for me. My 10 step saves my life. Like when I don't take inventory with my sponsor, I really, really feel it. And again, my defects start to like pop out a lot when I don't share with her what's going on, and my real inventory when I'm thoroughly honest with her. And the 12 step, I'm almost done. The 12 step has also saved my life a lot. Helping people has just been, you know, like a beautiful process for me. And it's not helping people. Like originally I thought I needed to sponsor the most women, and that's like my ego. And it's like, how many women do I sponsor and how many people see me helping other people? You know, it's still about this image of me helping other people. And my sponsor said, you know, it's the people that you're helping and the things that you're doing behind closed doors that no one's seeing. And so I really started to actually help people when no one else is looking and when I'm not getting credit for it. And that has helped me get out of my head the most. And I've built like beautiful relationships with people that I've helped and the people that helped me. And our primary purpose, I always go back to that. It's just like, you know, I want to stay sober and I want other help. I want to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety, because I've gotten a lot of things in my drinking. You know, I graduated college. I built relationships back up. You know, I got a boyfriend. I live in a beautiful apartment with my roommate. Like, I've gotten all those things, but if I don't help people, none of those things matter. You know, like the insides, it doesn't, and people always talk about it. And I'm like, that's such BS. You know, you get these things, you have a beautiful life. And like, that's all I can see. I can't see the insides of you, but people always say that like, it doesn't matter the outside things that you get. It's really how you feel on the inside, and that like peace and serenity. You know, I can get crazy a lot, like I've talked about, but for the most part, I've gotten way more peace in my life than I ever have before. And I think that definitely stems from helping other people. And I can really, really relate to other people's drinking. Like I said before, I'm really forgetful. Like I quickly forget my story. And so helping other people allows me to like remember my story and why I got sober. And really, I love feeling useful, like genuinely useful to these people. And because now I have experience, like I'm uniquely useful to other people and I'm able to share those experiences, like those dark, dark things that I did in my drinking and in my sobriety. I'm able to share that, you know, with other people. And that's something that I wasn't able to do before. No one wanted my advice. I had no experience that anyone wanted. And I think I'm about out of time. Am I? Okay. Well, that's all I have. Thanks for having me.